te Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. On this third day of September 2014 in Los Angeles, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in Canto 8, entitled Withdrawal of the Cosmic Creations, Chapter 10, The Battle Between the Demigods and the Demons. And this is text 25. Airavatam Dikkadinam Arudha Shushubhe Swarat Yata Sravat Prasravanam Udayadrim Aharpatihi Airavatam Dikkadinam Arudha Shushubhe Swarat Yata Sravat Prasravanam Udiyadrimaharpatihi Airavatam Dikkadinam Arudha Shushubhe Swarat Yata Sravat Prasravanam Udiyadrimaharpatihi Airavatam Dikkadinam Arudha Shushubhe Swarat Yata Sarvat Prasravanam Udiyadri Maharpatihi. Ravatam Dikkadinam. Aravitam Dikkadinam Subesavrat Yatasarvat Prasravanam Udiyadri Maharpatihi Aravitam Dikkadinam Arudha Shishubesavrat Yatasarvat Prasravanam Udiyadri Maharpatihi Airavatam Dikkadinam Arudha Shushubhe Swarat Yata Sarvat Prasavanam Udiyadri. Ladies, Airavatam Dikkadinam. Yata Sarvat Prasravanam Udiyadri Maharpatihi Airavatam Dikkadinam Arudha Shushubhe Swarat Yata Sarvat Prasravanam Udiyadri Maharpatihi Aravatam Dikkadinam Arudha Shushubhe Swarat Yata Sarvat Prasravanam Udiyadri Maharpatihi Aravatam. Oh. Go on. Okay. Okay, I'll just read the translation then. Sitting on Airavata, an elephant who can go anywhere and who holds water and wine in reserve for showering, Lord Indra looked just like the sun rising from Udayagiri, where there are reservoirs of water. So we'll go on to the next purport, whatever purport there is. Surrounding Lord Indra, the king of heaven, were the demigods seated on various types of vehicles and decorated with flags and weapons. Present among them were Vayu, Agni, Varuna, and other rulers of various planets, along with their associates. The demigods and demons came before each other and reproached one another with words piercing to the heart. Then they drew near and began fighting face to face in pairs. O king, Maharaj Bali fought with Indra, Kartikeya with Taraka, Varuna with Heti, and Mitra with Praheti. Yamaraj fought with Kalanava, Vishwakarma with Mayadhanava, Trashta with Shambhara, and the sun god with Virochana. The demigod Aparajita fought with Namuchi, and the two Ashwini Kumara brothers fought with Vrishaparva. The sun god fought with the 100 sons of Maharaj Bali, headed by Bana, and the moon god fought with Rahu. The demigod controlling air fought with Puloma, and Shumba and Nishkumba fought the supremely powerful material energy Durga Devi, who is called Bhadrakali. O Maharaj Parikshit, suppressor of enemies, Arindama, Lord Shiva fought with Jamba, and Vibhavasu fought with Mahishasura. Ilvala, along with his brother Vatapi, fought the sons of Lord Brahma. Durmarsha fought with Cupid, the demon Utkala with Matrika demigoddesses, Brahaspati with Shukracharya, and Shainashtara, Saturn, with Narakasura. The Maruts fought Nivata Kavacha, the Vasus fought the Kalakeya demons, the Vishvedeva demigods fought the Paulama demons, and the Rudras fought the Krodakvasha demons, who were victims of anger. All of these demigods and demons assembled on the battlefield with a fighting spirit and attacked one another with great strength. All of them desiring victory, they fought in pairs, hitting one another severely with sharpened arrows, swords, and lances. They severed one another's heads using weapons like pushundis, chakras, clubs, rishtis, patishas, shaktis, ulmukas, prasas, parashvadas, nistringsas, lances, parigas, mudgaras, and bindipalas. The elephants, horses, chariots, charioteers, infantry soldiers, and various kinds of carriers, along with their riders, were slashed to pieces. The arms, thighs, necks, and legs of the soldiers were severed, and their flags, bows, armor, and ornaments were torn apart. Because of the impact on the ground of the legs of the demons and the demigods and the wheels of the chariots, particles of dust flew violently into the sky and made a dust cloud that covered all directions of outer space as far as the sun. But when the particles of dust were followed by drops of blood being sprinkled all over the space, the dust cloud could no longer float in the sky. Do you have a purport here, Archana? I don't see the purport up there. Archana, Prabhu? Yeah. There's a story behind this purport. So I read the purport and then tell the story and then go on, because we're going to go on for another 6 or 7 minutes. Okay. So here's the story. First I'll read the purport. The cloud of dust covered the entire horizon. But when drops of blood sprayed up as far as the sun, the dust cloud could no longer float in the sky. A point to be observed here is that although the blood is stated to have reached the sun, it is not said to have reached the moon. Apparently, therefore, as stated elsewhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the sun, not the moon, is the planet nearest the earth. We have already discussed this point in many places. The sun is first, then the moon, then Mars, Jupiter, and so on. The sun is supposed to be, or said to be, 93 million miles above the surface of the earth. And from the Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that the moon is 1,600,000 miles above the sun. Therefore, the distance between the Earth and the Moon would be about 95 million miles. So if a space capsule were traveling at the speed of 18,000 miles per hour, how could it reach the Moon in 4 days? At that speed, going to the Moon would take at least 7 months. That a space capsule on a Moon excursion has reached the Moon in 4 days is therefore impossible. Om Jnanatam Randasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unminitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So the reason why this purport is not there in the Veda base is because Srila Prabhupada said to take it out, and I'll tell you why. Whenever books were printed during Prabhupada's time, advanced copy was sent to him. He would get the first copies off the printer, and it has a special gold binding a gold leaf there. And so Prabhupada got this volume of the eighth canto. It looks like probably the second volume. And he had his servants with him always. So this servant at that time was Harisari. So Prabhupada looked at the book, and then he gave it to Harisari. And every devotee, whenever these books would come out, they would immediately read them. We would devour them. You know, this is a new book. And oftentimes, it would bring about a revolution in the whole movement. You know, when the fifth canto came out, you know, some devotees couldn't accommodate, you know, all of the amazing astronomical stuff. But anyway, so the eighth canto came out, and Harisari immediately read it. So he came upon this purport in chapter 10. And he said, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense, you know. And he came to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I think there's an error here. And Prabhupada said, what could it be? What is that? And so he told him, he said, Srila Prabhupada, you have this whole purport. Basically, it's talking about how these, you know, you can imagine such a battle that the drops of blood were flying into space. This is the violence of tumult. So that's what it says here. And it reached the sun first. Right? And Harisari pointed out to Prabhupada, okay, you made a whole argument on that basis that the sun is closer than the moon, because it doesn't say they hit the moon. But Srila Prabhupada, this battle is taking place not on the earth, it's taking place on the shore of the ocean of milk. And Prabhupada said, oh, you're right. Therefore, that purport should be removed. This is history. And it has been removed from the Veda base, and when we print this, the volumes of the Bhagavatam, it won't appear there. But apparently this database from the that I got on for the iPad still has it in. So with that in mind, I'm just going to review now this whole pastime. So because there's some lessons to be learned here. So you go way back previous chapters, what happened is that Bali Maharaj had become very powerful. And he was conquering the whole the demigods' planets, the higher planets. And they were in great distress. And so they went to Lord Brahma, and they prayed that he do something. And so as later on at the beginning of the 10th canto, he went and meditated, you know, on the ocean of milk, on the shore of the ocean of milk. And he got, again, a vision of the Lord, and he said, okay, what you should do now, because the demons are more powerful than you, try to call a truce. You know, have a truce, and try to get this churning going of the ocean of milk, and that'll be the inducement. So there was a truce declared. Now they didn't love each other; they were still enemies. You know, but they said, okay, we'll cooperate for this higher end. We'll all get the nectar, and from this nectar, the word nectar. In English, it means the same thing as the word in Sanskrit, amrita. This is something I discovered by accident. Amrita means no death, that which makes you immortal, right? And the demons and the demigods, they were very anxious to become immortal and drink this nectar. The word nectar is made of two Greek roots, nek and tar. Nek is the same root that we have in necrophilia or like that. It has to do with death. Necrotic, if you have no circulation, part of your muscles can die, you know. So that's a root that means death. And tar is the same thing we have, tarani. You know, tarani means one who delivers. So that which delivers you from death is nectar. Same word, you see? So anyway, they wanted to get the nectar or the amrit. And so they declared a truce. And so they were advised by Krishna to use Mount Mandara to... Is this incense still burning? Or is it, is it coming from the altar? Anyway, it's a little tough for me. So they were advised to churn the ocean. And at the same time, Krishna would also enjoy this pastime. He would participate as a jita. He was an incarnation who participated in the later on when they needed some help. So now just try to review now in your mind what happened with this whole thing. It's all materially motivated. It's entirely materially motivated, you know, to get the nectar so we'll become immortal and we'll live a long time and enjoy. So Krishna is encouraging them because there's various sub-pastimes that are going to happen in this, and he's going to enjoy, especially as Kurma, the scratching on his back. This is mentioned later in the 12th canto. So anyway, so they get Mount Mundra. Now, Mount Mundra is solid gold. Now, any mountain is heavy, but if it's made of solid gold, it's even heavier. So they're carrying it a long distance, and they get exhausted. You know, all the demigods and the demons, they get exhausted, and they drop it. It starts crushing their bodies, you know, and broken legs, and they're all depressed and distressed. They don't know what to do. So Vishnu comes on Garuda, and he lifts up the mountain and puts it on the back of Garuda, and off they go to the ocean of milk. So he's helping at every step. So now, okay. So here we have, and then he advises, okay, now get Vasuki. You have to have a robe. So Vasuki, the chief of the serpent, will serve as the robe. All right, so they put the mountain, they're holding the mountain, it's in the water, the milk, and they got Vasuki wrapped up, and the demons are at the tail, and Vishnu, he's helping, he's at the front, along with the demigods. And the demon says, oh, we're at the back, we're at the tail, this is inauspicious, we want to be at the head. So they refuse to participate. You have to have both sides pulling. Okay. So Vishnu says, you take the head and we'll go to the back. You know? So later on, when they actually started churning and all, you know, it looked like a dragon. I mean, all those fires coming out of Vasuki's mouth, then the demons got all blackened. So they got the bad side anyway. So anyway, they start churning, but, you know, they're not thinking, right? You can't just churn, put a big, you know, mountain in the ocean of milk and churn because it's going to sink. So it sinks down. Right? Again, they're depressed. What are we going to do now? You know? So Kurma appears underneath, lifts it up, and now they're ready. And also, there's an incarnation at the top, because you have to have something holding at the top. So he's also at the top. So now everything is ready, the churn. All right, let's go. Churn, 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 churn. And they're churning like anything. They also added herbs and all kinds of things to the milk, if you read it. So they're churning, 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 and what happens? What comes out? Hala, hala. You know, this terrible poison that can kill everybody. Now they're in distress. What are we going to do? So they go to Shiva, and there's all kinds of prayers to Shiva and everything. And then, you know, glorification. This is one of the things that you should know. There's one of our practices is Vandanam, right? Now, Vandanam, have you ever noticed? It means prayers, and it also means bowing down, isn't it? It says, Vande Hum Shiva, are you bowing down? So it has both of these elements. Vandanam encompasses bowing down, and offering glorification and prayers. The prayer in English always is a request, ultimately, to the prayer. You look at the prayers in the Bhagavatam, there's so many prayers, and they almost always have this combination. Eventually, you'll see. There's a lot of glorification. Either prayers or palad. There's so much glorification and other things going on. But you'll see that there's he bows down at the beginning. And then at the end, he's reluctant to ask for anything, although he does ask for the deliverance of the fallen souls. And ultimately, Nisringa wants to offer him some more benedictions, but he's reluctant. I'm not doing business with you, you know. But ultimately, he asks for deliverance for his father, and that he won't have any material desires. This is his prayer. This is a very nice prayer. We can, you know. So anyway, this is what they glorify Shiva. Then they ask for his prayer. Please help us. You know, you can drink this poison. So he agrees. So he drinks all the poison. This hala hala, you know. And the only effect on him is that he gets a little blue line on his neck. That's the effect. If we would touch one drop of it, we'd be dead. It's like super cyanide. But he's so powerful, he's not affected. Okay, now we can, you know, proceed. So a few drops fell down, scorpions happened, poisonous snakes, you know, they got the poison. So now ready to go again. So they start churning. And it mentions Airavata, he came out, right? And other elephants came out, and the goddess of fortune came out. There's a whole pastime with that. She's searching, searching, searching amongst, you know, qualified. She comes to Vishnu. Okay, Uchaishrava comes out. This horse, a special horse. All this stuff comes out. And the moon comes out. Well, it's not mentioned in the Bhagavatam, but it's in other Puranas. The full moon comes out. And finally, Dhanvantari comes, right, with the jug of nectar, right? Oh, now the nectar is there, you know. Immediately, the demons grab it. The demons grab it. But they have they're rivals. The demons are not all one, you know, just homogeneous mass, and so they're afraid. Some of the weaker demons are afraid the stronger demons and they get all the nectar. So they become suddenly pious. It says, oh, the demigods participated in the churning. Why shouldn't they get some? They're arguing like that, you know. So finally, there's all this argument going on, And Mohini Murti then comes. Krishna comes to Mohini Murti and bewilders the demigods completely. You know? And, oh, yeah, whatever you say. I will help you if you agree to do whatever I say. And she's so beautiful. I mean, unbelievably beautiful. You know, imagine Krishna, who's so beautiful, you know, stunningly beautiful, that the gopis don't even want to blink their eyes. And all of that beauty and grace is now in woman form. You know. So the demons are just helpless, you know, because they're conducted by the modes of passion and ignorance. So they say, oh yes, whatever you say. So she takes the, you know, you have to promise, you know, to agree. So they line up and she gives all the nectar to the demigods. And the demons are just sitting there. They already agreed, you know. And Rahu, you know, sneaks in and gets a drop of nectar and she cuts off his head. But the head is immortal, so he becomes a planet, and the eclipses and the new moon and stuff. So that all happened, if you recall, over the last few months you've been reading this. So after all of this, the demons feel super cheated now. You know, they did all the work, they didn't get a drop of nectar, so that's the battle that we're hearing now. They're so infuriated, this battle is going on like crazy, you know. Now, just step back a minute and just think about this whole pastime. Now, of course, there's a lot of sub-things that happen. You know, the Kurma came, there's a lot of wonderful prayers and lessons within the pastime. But the overall lesson of this is that these demigods and demons, from the point of view of pure devotion, are fools. They're fools. This is an extreme example of aspiring for a material thing that ultimately brings so much trouble, right? And they're not, Amrita? Come on, we just read about all the horses, the blood, everything. They're getting killed. Not only the demons, but the demigods too. So where's the Amrita? Is it? Isn't there no Amrita? It's just a false, you know, sense of immortality. So I wanted to just step back from this, because this is part of the lesson of the Bhagavatam, is that, you know, a very important lesson, that there's nothing in the three worlds, in the material world, to aspire over. Right at the beginning, how the Bhagavatam came to be written, we find that Narada Muni comes to Vyasadeva in the fifth chapter of the first canto, right? And Vyasadeva had already written all the Vedas which describe, you know, sacrifices and worship the different gods by which you can get to the heavenly planets. These are the famous flowery words of the Vedas that Krishna says Arjun should ignore. Don't be bewildered. Yam imam pushpitam vacham prabhatam tevipashchadha vedavara rata pata nandirasti divarana. The vedavara ratas, this is a phrase, an idiom in Sanskrit, that means the so-called knowers of the Vedas. They know so many verses from this, you know, this Veda and that Veda, the Karmakanda section. You know, but they don't really know the purport of the Vedas. Vedas cha sarva ahameva vedya. Krishna says, by all the Vedas I am to be known. But those who ignore that and try to get some material benefit from Vedic knowledge are being cheating themselves. So, Vyasadeva was dissatisfied after writing all of writing down the Vedas and dividing them and writing, you know, the Upanishads and the Mahabharata and Vedanta Sutra and all the other Puranas. He still was something was wrong. And so in his distress, he meditated and Narada Muni came. And he spoke these very important instructions. And one of them that Prabhupada always quoted, you know, which we should know, Tasyaiva heto prayatete kovido nalabhyate yad brahmatama parayata. Talabhyate dukkha vadanyatakusa kale nasarvata gabhira rangasa. Therefore, if someone is intelligent, He will not strive for anything up the Brahma Loka or down to Rasata Loka. You know? Heto, for the cause, for the purpose. Prayatete means striving very hard, which is what these demons and demigods are doing. Putting your entire energy into it. Don't strive for anything in these worlds. Because the amount of happiness that you're going to get is already programmed in by what you've done in your previous life. And the amount of misery. Just like the dukkha comes unsought. Right? Nobody prays for, let me be miserable today. Let me have 3 hours of misery and 2 hours of happiness. No one is it like that. Everyone is trying to maximize the happiness and minimize the misery forever. But we know that unhappiness comes. Miseries, the threefold miseries come, unsought. Similarly, your happiness will come unsought, your material happiness. So there's no point in trying to decrease one and increase the other. That's a waste of time. What you can strive for is Krishna bhakti, by which you can become blissful all the time. You get out of this realm of relative happiness and distress. That's the whole point. And Narada said, you haven't sufficiently described that, pure bhakti and Krishna and the devotees and everything. So you have to write a book on that, and that was the Bhagavatam. He meditated and he saw, you know, I don't know if you, we won't get into that right now because it's something special I want to do. So here you see an extreme example of how within, the demons and the demigods. Now the demigods, just, you know, they're saintly, they're responsible, they're devotees, but they're karma mishra bhaktas. They have a strong element of material desire within their devotion. They always come out on top eventually because when they're in trouble, they pray to Vishnu, right? What do the demons do? I don't know who they pray to, but they're not praying to Vishnu, you know? They're relying on their own strength, you know, and so forth. And so they eventually lose. But the demigods also lose if they're just involved in these material things. So I wanted to share something with you. This whole point is made very succinctly by the nine Yogendras. You know this verse? This verse is a verse we should all know. Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jigyashu shreya uttamam shabde padecha nishnatam brahman upashamashayam. This is a verse Prabhupada would always quote about the necessity for searching out a bona fide guru. Necessity for whom? For those who want to be really happy without any tinge of sadness. So that verse, beginning with tasmad, of course, tasmad means therefore. So there's some verses before it. And I've looked into this, and they're very interesting verses. I won't read the whole Sanskrit. What he's proving, this Yogendra, he's proving that there's no happiness in the material world. So he says, people who are simply engaged in pairing off as man and woman, engaging in ordinary material life, they engage in so many activities for two things. Dukkha hatyai sukhayacha, to destroy the happiness or minimize the unhappiness or minimize it and increase the happiness. But one should see, and a wise person should see, that in the end they get just the opposite. All of their happiness evaporates with time because it all depends on the body, right? And the senses eventually become sources of misery. And all of your misery increases tremendously your happiness. So, but people, you know, engage in this, they have to get money. You know, if you're going to make money. So, the Nityarthi Dana, this vitta, this money brings so much misery in getting it, in trying to keep it, so the government doesn't get it in the banks, and in trying to spend it properly. And, you know. So he says, Nitya Arti Dana is always giving misery. It's difficult to get. And Atma Mrityuna, just think about this phrase. It means the death of the soul. You know, of course the soul can't die. So it means the death of your spiritual life. If you're always absorbed in getting and spending money and making money and, you know, eventually you become very sinful, you know, climbing the corporate ladder or whatever, criminal activity. This is Atma Mrityuna, you know. And the things which you can buy with it are temporary. And they lose their luster. The things which you want so much eventually become dry. You know, they program that in. What is it called? Planned obsolescence, you know. So you become dissatisfied. Buy more, buy more. So how can there be any happiness? Okay, so that's on this planet. But what about up there in heaven? So this pertains to our passage here because he talks, he says, similarly, even in the heavenly planets, it's also temporary. It's also a result of karma, means material activity to get up there, right? We learn it in the Gita. And then he says, that there's always rivals there. There are always rivals, just as here. We heard that about the demons. It's also with the demigods. You know, you go up there and you're enjoying, says, I'm enjoying somewhat, but look at Indra. He's enjoying like crazy. You know, you're not free of the modes of nature are active up there. So, and just as there are down here, there's rival kings trying to enjoy like that. So, that's not going to help you to go to the heavenly planets. Therefore, one should surrender to a genuine guru, defined as Shabde Parecha Nishnatam Brahmani, means completely absorbed and realized in two aspects of the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Shastra and the Supreme Lord Himself. In other words, this is a real Acharya. and upashamashriyam, completely free of any tinge of material desire. This is a short definition of a genuine guru. Then what do you do then? Then he says, at the feet of such a guru, one should learn the Bhagavad Dharma, Krishna consciousness, regarding the spiritual master as one's very life and soul and worshipable god, you know, demigod, that like that. Guru of Atma Daivita. This is, appears in other instruction in the Yogendras. And then with non-deceptive service, one should serve that spiritual master and at the same time serve the Lord, because that's what the spiritual master tells you to do, right? Serve Krishna. You know, so you serve the spiritual master by nicely serving Krishna also. And then who is that Lord? Atma Do. He gives himself. Hari, Krishna, gives himself to the sincere disciple who's nicely serving the guru. And then there's two verses here, and the reason I brought this up is because this is how devotees enjoy. We're not concerned with the so-called amrita. We're concerned with the real amrita. Who knows this verse? Tavakatamritam tapta jivanam kavabiriditam kalmashapaham shavanamangalam shimadatatam bhuvigunandiye puridhajana. This is a wonderful verse. It's a song, one of the songs, verses in the songs of the gopis, separated from Krishna. And the Rasa dance, it's also famous for being in the CC when King Prataparudra was massaging Lord Chaitanya's feet. He chanted all these verses, and when he came to that one, Lord Chaitanya embraced him. So what does it mean? The gopis are praying to Krishna. They can't see him. They're in the middle of the dark forest, but they're praying directly. The nectar of talks about you is a life and soul, is the life and soul of those who are suffering in this material world. Tapta jivanam kavabiriditam. It's sung by great poets, these glories. Kavabiriditam, kalmashapam, destroys all sinful reactions, all miseries brought by sin. Very auspicious to hear. Shravana mangalam, full of spiritual power. Srimad, atatam bhuvigunandiye bodhidajana. Those who are spreading your glories throughout this world are the greatest welfare workers for this world. This is a Sankirtan verse. You know, Harinam and book distribution are in this mood, you know, and Prabhupada is a nice purport. So that's real amrit, not this amrit coming out of the ocean of milk, you know. It didn't work, right? They got killed. So, but this will really make you immortal. This is real amrit, you're tasty. So how to churn up that ocean? There's one verse I wasn't able to research, I forgot. There's a poem by Rupa Goswami. It's not that long. It consists of mostly names of Radha and Krishna. And I forget the name of it. But he says, now, using the mandara mountain of your tongue, churn up this ocean of milk of this prayer that I just wrote. And in this way, get the real nectar of Krishna consciousness. I'll share that with you next time. Anyway, so we have something special. So I just wanted to two more verses in this series. You're going on a little bit. How do devotees churn up the nectar? These are verses that are worth memorizing. 11:330 in the next verse. Padaspadanu katanam. Here's the katana again. Pavanam bhagavadisha mito ratir mitastushtir nivrita mita atmanaha. Getting together. Paraspara means getting together, just like this. Or kirtan is also the same thing. Anukatanam, and chanting the katha, the sound vibrations about the most pure Bhagavad Yasha, the glories of Bhagavan, which are all purifying, Pavanam. What happens? Mito ratir. You develop genuine spiritual relationship, attraction for each other on the spiritual level. Mitas tushtir, mutual satisfaction of the heart. Remember, tushti is described in the Bhagavad Gita, 11. I'm sorry. And then, Nivriti Madama, and mutually you help each other become detached from material things. In other words, you develop a real attraction for Krishna and Krishna Katha and each other. And this is how devotee relationships are nourished and detachment. And then the next verse is even more famous, especially one line I think many of you will recognize. And then Smadantak Smadayantyascha Mito Gaugahadam Harim Bhaktya Sanjataya Bhaktya Bibhrat Utpulikam Tanum. So, thus remembering Krishna and reminding each other of Krishna. This is the value of sadhu sangha. You remember Krishna yourself and you remind each other of Krishna. And mutually, Aga Aga Haram Harim, you're worshiping Hari, who takes away the vast flood or everything inauspicious from the heart. It's an Aga Oga. Oga means like this big mass, but it's all Haram, taken away by Hari. And the result of this kind of bhakti, which is sadhana bhakti, is bhava bhakti. Bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya. And the result is ecstatic symptoms. He mentions the hair standing. I didn't, you know, then you go from there. So the point is, this is that development of bhakti is millions of times more valuable than all of this nectar they're trying to get. And you can see all the trouble. This is not susukam kartam, just getting this nectar. Not at all. That means easily and happily perform. But bhakti, we come together, dance, Hare Krishna, you know, and yesterday, wonderful festival. Where's the big austerity? Yeah. Oh, half day fast. Come on, give me a break. It's susukam kartam abhi. So anyway, that's the lesson I get from this thing, is that do not be bewildered by any material allurements of this world. Here we see the demigods who are living at a very high level, anyway, and they're now they're in anxiety, oh, we're losing our planets, we'll do the nectar, and it's now they're in the middle of like a huge battle, which is no fun, it's not good, it's not fun to be in the middle of a war, but in the spiritual world there's nothing like that. It's completely, it's just solid Satchitananda. So that's what we should aspire to. Now, what time? It's getting late. Well, not too late. We have a little time for maybe a couple of comments. Then I want to do something I didn't get a chance to do yesterday, was share with you this Radashtaka that was originally written by Krishna's Kaviraj that we'll chant together. Any questions on the class itself? Bhanubhattrava? Do we have a mic? That famous mic, which is so hard to incorporate in the kirtan. I'm not sure why you want to trip around on that wire, but if you got a wireless, use it.
Thank you, Shravita Prabhu, for a wonderful enlightening class.
More glories to Prabhupada.
I have an observation, and I'd appreciate if you could comment on it. I notice when it talks about the different demigods that are paired with different demons in fighting in this battle, it mentions several personalities. One of them is Virochana.
Uh-huh.
Now, is Virochana the son of Prahlad Maharaj?
Oh, and Bana is also mentioned. Did you notice Bana was there? He's the grandson.
Bali Maharaj.
Well, Bana is the son of Bali. Maybe we're getting into great grandson. Oh. Bana is on there. He's on. He gets. Okay. He gets chastised later in the 10th game.
And is Virochana the son of Prahlad?
I forget. So he's the son of Prahlad.
So we have a whole line here coming from Prahlad Maharaj. Yeah. And of course, we know the whole story of Prahlad Maharaj, and his father getting killed by Hiranyakashipu, and such a saintly person, Prahlad Maharaj. And so I'm just, thinking how it is, of course we know even Srila Prabhupada's sons, they didn't become pure devotees. But it just seems a little odd to me that we have Virochana here, we have Bali Maharaj's son.
Bana also.
And they're all fighting against these demigods. Is this all pure pastime of Krishna? Or, I don't know.
But as you mentioned, we have the Advaita's sons also. Not all of them were devotees. He's God, Advaita, Acharya, right? You really, the living entity has this independence. And we've seen in our own society, Prabhupada, when we were coming up in the 70s, the Gurukul was filled with 6 and 7 year olds, and everybody's shining and jumping up and down. You thought, wow, this is the next generation. They're going to take over the world, But somehow, it doesn't always work out that way. The living entity always has his minute independence. And, that even Prahlad, he said, could not instill the pure bhakti within his own generation. I think that's your point. Well, how is that? But we see the same thing happened with Prabhupada, If you are you know, too much affected by the modes of nature, the good instruction and example will not stick. You know, that's my experience. Archie, do you have a comment?
Well, why are we surprised? Even the demigods themselves are not pure devotees, as you just mentioned in the class. So this free will, and when you look at it, both camps, they have the same father, Kashyapa Muni. They're, on the surface, looks like they're both practicing Vedic culture, right? The demons, they give in charity to brahmanas. They, you know, they observe, they have their guru, you know, Shukracharya. So on the surface, it looks like they're living the same lifestyle. And both camps have material aspirations. The main difference is that when you get to the root of it, the demigods, like you said, when they're in trouble, they pray to Vishnu. So at heart, they're devotees, even though they have... Whereas at heart, those in the other camp, they're not devotees. They are depending on themselves or something other than God.
Right.
But on the surface, it looks the same. It's not that, you know, they're walking around with fangs, and Bali Maharaj didn't have fangs. He described how beautiful he was and how beautiful his airplane was. And, you know, they're living a beautiful lifestyle. But when push came to shove, he himself showed his devotional side later on, Bali Maharaj.
Yeah.
So just because somebody's in the demoniac camp doesn't mean that they're lost cause forever. And just because somebody's in the other side, the demigod camp, doesn't mean that they're glorious devotees. They're also contaminated.
Yeah,
so both camps are contaminated, and both camps get a chance to go forward. Some take it and some don't. Some of the demons take the opportunity when it's presented to become surrendered to Krishna. Like Bali Maharaj is a famous example. But that doesn't mean, again, that just because right now it seems that they're fighting, that there's no hope for them.
Yeah, I was just reading, there's this correction that came up, the spelling of Bhagadatta. Maybe that name doesn't mean too much to you. That's the name of the son of Narakasura, who was installed by Krishna, you know, as the king of Pragjyotishapura, I think it was. And you would think, well, okay, you know, I've installed it. But he gets killed ultimately. He still maintains his demonic mood, and he gets killed in some battle or something. You know. I think it's in this battle.
I had a question, though.
Yeah.
In this description today that you read, it mentioned that some women were fighting, demigoddesses, including Durga herself. Now, we've always been told that in the Vedic culture, women don't fight. Like famous Bhishma Dev would not fight because of, you know, the women. So how is it, it doesn't seem to jive here, that, you know, these women are on the battlefield, they're fighting.
Was there other women? I think that's
special. Yeah, no, there was a bunch of demigoddesses fighting. There was Durga herself was fighting in the form of Bhadrakali.
Yeah, well, I mean, when it's a fight to the death, you call on all the assets that you got, you know. I don't think anyone can conquer Durga. She's I can't answer that, you know. But one thing is that when push comes to shove, you see that all of the regulations go out the window. Even in the Mahabharata, it starts out very regulated, right? The conch shell blows, everyone just calms down. They have, you know, dinner together, and that was some good arrows you shot there. And then next morning, conch shell blows, they're at each other's throats and trying to kill each other. But what happens at the end? You've got Ashwatthama killing children, which is like the worst possible thing. And then throwing the Brahmastra, you know, he's cheating. You know, he's like super cheating. Because they lost, you know, he's desperate. And so, these regulations and things break down when in the heat of the battle, when it gets too, but, you know, like that. That's what happens. Can we go on to our little Radhashtaka? All right, we have a few more urgent questions. Go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Bo.
You started the class by mentioning the purport that was taken out.
Yes.
So when Prabhupada makes the calculation of the moon, the sun, you know, in relation to the earth, that calculation is right.
Well, yeah, this verse was not the reason why he originally did that. He's coming from some figures in the fifth canto, which need to be understood in a certain way, which Sataputta explained to us, and I can't get into that now. But he found a way of defining that. There's also a question: what is really Chandraloka? You know, so this is a question that I'm not prepared to. I mean, I'd have to write an essay and do a lot of research to really get into that. But that was something, you know, Prabhupada at a certain point in time he was preaching, and we have to somehow it's true. I don't realize how it's true right now, but it's got to be true. Can we do the Radhashtaka? Okay. So, just to tell you how this came about, there's a book called More Vaishnava Songs, compiled by Dasarath Sudhababu, who did some very good work, and this is one of the best things he did. And these are songs that sometimes you hear, but somehow they're not in the original songbook. And one of the things that he put in there, which I think was from his own favorite, there are these two ashtakas that are within the body of the Govinda Lilamrita, sung by parrots, a male and female parrot. So you get a little hint of that in the CC when Lord Chaitanya goes to Vrindavan. I don't know if you got that far yet, but when you go there and these two parrots come down and sit on a branch or sit on his hand, and they're arguing, who's more attractive? Who's enchanting whom? Who's bewildering whom? Is it Radharani bewildering Krishna or Krishna bewildering Radharani? So there's this charming little argument there. And ultimately, of course, as you obviously know, the sari wins. She's the female advocating Radharani. And what the verse there, which is, I was going in my head yesterday because it's all about Radharani. Shri Radhikaya Priyata Surupata Sushilata Nartanagana Chaturi Kunali Sampat Kavita Charajate Jagannamano Mohina Chitta Mohini. So that last line means that with all of these qualities, Srimati Radharani bewilders the mind of Krishna, who otherwise bewilders the mind of everybody in the universe. You know, Jagannamano Mohana. He's Madana Mohan. So he's Jagannamano Mohana Chitta Mohini. So what is it? Shri Radhikaya, first thing is her love. Shri Radhikaya Priyata and Surupita, the beautiful form. Sushilata, her character and her behavior. And Nartanagana Chaturi, her expertise in singing and dancing. Gunali Sampat, she's a treasure chest of all good qualities. And then it mentions Kavita Acharajate, and her poetic ability, her ability to, you know, verbally fight with Krishna. That's a very attractive also. And all of these and many others, she attracts Krishna. So what this is again, you have the two parrots, but they're kind of formal ashtakas right in the middle of the Govinda Lilamrita. And they're very charming, and I wanted to share it with you. I didn't get to do it yesterday. So I actually have it on here, and Archita, I'll just have to coordinate with you. And maybe cartels and a drum, because you can sing it. All right. I took out the Sanskrit because you wouldn't know what it was. No, someone else can play the cartels. I'm going to have to signal him when to turn. So go to the first one. And this is it. Her gold complexion steals the pride of golden lotus tinged with red. Her fragrance mocks the scent of lotus bloom with saffron powder spread. Her skill in satisfying Sri Hari is perfect and complete. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. I know someone can get the cartels. Not a difficult beat. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Her wondrous silken garment, shameless splendor, rubies can display. She is a blooming garden where the bee of Krishna loves to play. She worships Surya every day, so she and Madhava can meet. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. Eclipsed by Radha's tenderness, the fame of budding blossom dims. The moon, the lotus, sandal paste, and camphor serve her cooling limbs. When Krishna burns with love and desires, her soothing touch dispels the heat. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Rama Ram. Though youthful goddesses adored by all adore the goddess Shri, she lacks Shirada's beauty, youth, and every other quality. So when it comes to lover sports, with Radha no one can compete. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. In arts like dancing, singing, joking, Radha is by far the best. She shines with countless traits divine, like love and gorgeous form and dress. Among the famous gopis of Vrindavan, she's supremely sweet. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram. Eternal pastime, beauty, youth, and love for Krishna make her rich. The loving gopis tremble just to see her love at highest pitch. Her meditation on Sri Krishna's form and pastimes is complete. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Perspiring, trembling, hairs on end, and crying, faltering of the voice. Impatience, joy, and God, these signs of rapture make her friends rejoice. For Krishna's eyes, these many gem-like ecstasies provide a treat. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. May Radhika bestow on me the service. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Apart from Krishna for a moment, Radha feels anxiety and restlessness and other moods, the highest kind of ecstasy. But when she meets them with some effort, all her sufferings retreat. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. May Radhika bestow on me the service of her lotus feet. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Exalted goddesses like Parvati can hardly ever see. She Krishna's lover, Radhika, but if a humble devotee recites these verses, then she Radha, who enjoys with Sri Hari, will pour the nectar of her service down on him eternally. Will pour the nectar of her service down on eternally. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Jaya Radhe, Jaya Radhe, Jaya Radhe, Jaya Shri Radhe. Go, Premanande, Hare Hare, go.
Thank you very much. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. I hope I don't get in trouble. I chanted Radharani's name and it wasn't Radhastami. So don't report me, okay? Hare Krishna.
You need to read it up on Sarapuda, how he figured it out.